Foodie Films is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me. Hey there, foodie fans, and welcome back to another episode of Foodie Films. Of course, this is your host, your chef de cinema cuisine, Kyle Reinfried. What's going on? How you been? I gotta tell you, I love this time of year. Fall might be my favorite time of year, but I love this time of year because the days are longer, and, well, you know, they're the same length, but it's brighter out, so rooftop bars are opening back up, so you go to happy hour and you get to have a pint on top of some awesome building in the city and get a great view. But what am I talking about this for? I'm riding high. I've been talking with some great people in the food industry, and they've been so kind in putting me into contact with other people. So we've had the La Frida episode, and now we have Chef Paul Denemieux. He is the owner and the head chef at Le Ravage on Restaurant Row, and that's where I went. We actually went to his apartment above the restaurant. It's an amazing restaurant. I had been there before. I can't wait to go back. Maybe by the time this episode has been released, I have gone back. Maybe there's even some video footage. So go to YouTube, go to our YouTube channel and see if there is. But anyway, I went there. And he's got an apartment above the restaurant, and they were fixing up he's got this beautiful old private dining room area, huge, the whole like first floor. And I can't imagine what kind of events he's going to be having there, and the guests and the great dinner parties. Maybe I'll get to be invited to one someday. Paul, hint, hint. But yeah, so we were in there, and I just loved it. I was in the heart of New York interviewing this amazing chef, a French-American chef, but that's not all he is. He's an awesome guy. He's a hilarious guy. This is a silly episode. I really love this episode. Paul's a funny guy. I think we had a great time talking, and, well, you know, I always try to make it a conversation, but I'm just asking questions, and I was loving his answers, and we just talk about so many things, but we're in the heart of New York City. We got sirens going by, you know, they're working on his apartment. I love hearing the steaming pipes, and we've got a guest appearance a few times by his dog, Emma, a welcome guest. I love dogs, and she had a few things to say. So, without further ado, here's me and Chef Paul talking a little bit of everything. The big things I'm doing now to help myself out is whenever there's a moment, like I said, I mean, we've got your dog in here. If there's like if a dog barks, like a guest of mine,
part of the
part of the show. I'll write down the time in case, like, or like if the doorbell rang and they started to, you know, go on. But I mean, if we'll jump right in. She's Emma's her name. Yeah, she's good.
She's good. Emma.
Out for the count.
She's knocked the fuck out. What is this? A PG? Is this PG?
No, anything you want to. Yeah, anything goes.
Good.
Yeah.
Good thing you told me that. Because.
Well, I mean, what do you want to tell me? That's not just PG. What are
we talking about? We can go all over the place. You know, I'm nearing the half century mark, so I've got a few stories behind me.
Oh, yeah, half century. Or yeah. You got any big plans?
No, I think I got a couple more years to plan it.
Okay.
So I'm turning 48 or 71, so 89. Yeah, turning. Yeah.
That happens more and more, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like last year, I went to dinner with my mom, And I was telling her, I was like, this, oh man, it sucks. I'm turning like 40. I'm going to be, it's like, oh, last year, it's like, oh, I'm turning 48. And she's like, no, you boob, you're only 47. I'm like, really? I've been telling people I've been 48 for like the past year now. It's like, I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, my 30th. So I'm going to be turning 32 on my 30th. I just always like to, I have like a family dinner because my mom just makes like amazing, barbecue ribs. And that's like what I want.
Yeah, but there's nothing says that you have to have one party.
Oh, no, exactly. So I do like a family thing and I do like a friend.
I think 50 is going to deserve like, I think I didn't do 45. I wanted to do 45. I didn't do 45. I wanted to do 4. I didn't do 40. So I think I'm going to catch up. And on 50, I'm just going to do the whole shebang and just like boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to.
That's proper. I like it.
You know? And then, yeah, the last few years have been rough. So how long did you get to have Pat on? Because he's hard to wrangle.
I like an hour and a half.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's.
I was just I figured with him.
That means he was deep into conversation. Yeah, because him to like, okay, we're done. Bye.
Yeah, I mean, like I figured with him he was really cool from the get-go. I reached out to him because I saw him post something on Instagram saying, from my army days, I'm just good at, you know, I like to reply to people as soon as possible.
Yeah, I try, but...
Oh, it's so difficult. I can't imagine. I mean, and he did put on it, like, his people in, like, his business and his customers and that kind of stuff, but I figured, why not reach out to him? And look what happened. Now I'm getting to talk to you.
So, yeah, me and him go way back. Our families go way back.
Yeah, he's mentioned, so his dad used to supply to your dad. Let's talk about that.
It's even more than that, because... my dad came to this country after he did like 3 years tour duty in North Africa in Algeria.
Oh, wow.
And he went back to France for like 2 weeks and then said, fuck this, and then came here.
Okay.
His two older brothers were here. But his brother is older by 10 years. So there's like a big age gap. So like I always looked at my uncle as being like, the grandfather,
sure,
because of the pronounced age difference, and then my dad, who was the baby in the family, and then there was an older brother who was closer to the older brother. So my dad was really like the baby in the family, and I think they had an aunt here that was in the business too, mm-hmm. And I think she's the one that introduced my uncle to Pat LaFrieda. So we're going back. I don't know how long, but at least 3 generations, definitely.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, but they don't coincide, you know, they're not parallel, but it's definitely 3 generations of like family. Sure,
family dealings, you know? And stuff like that. Do you remember the first time meeting Pat? I mean, you guys are practically the same age, so.
Yeah, we're the same age. Yeah. I think he's one.
1 year older?
I think he's 1 year old. No. I might be the oldest.
Okay.
I know. I like to say I'm the oldest, but I look the youngest. If you see all those boobs, there's a whole posse around Pat LaFrieda. So
yeah, was that the one that was down in South Beach? Because I follow you both on Instagram.
And yeah, that's a tight crew there.
Yeah,
there's more, and not everybody, you know. Yeah. But it's seldom that we really get to have everybody in one shot. We try to make efforts for birthdays and things like that. But South Beach, that was a good crew.
He wrote back to me. He was just like, oh, I just got back from Sobe, and I'm so uncool. I was just like, I Googled Sobe, location. Oh, South Beach. I didn't know that's like the nickname.
Yeah, they short it. It's on all the advert. It is Sobe.
Oh, okay, yeah. I know like NOLA for New Orleans.
Yeah, but like even in Manhattan, there's all these abbreviations now that I'm like, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
I've only lived here 50 years. I still, what?
Huh? So, I've got a bunch of questions for you, but try to make it as much of a conversation versus me feeling like Larry King or something. But you grew up in New York.
Yeah.
You grew up in the Upper East Side?
I grew up as a kid. I grew up on the Upper East Side because my dad had a restaurant there on 86. Okay. Sorry. 86 between 1st and 2nd. And that was like the first restaurant in the whole family that really took off.
Okay.
And originally it was on 86 between 2nd and 3rd. And that in those days, Yorkville was Germantown. So like all through the early part of the century up through World War II and everything, that was Yorkville was Germantown.
Yeah.
It was nothing but German dance halls, beer halls, restaurants.
I think there's still that one place, Heidelberg.
Heidelberg is still there. That's great. On Second Avenue. Yeah. I used to the son is still is the owner there. We used to go to karate class together. Yeah, I remember. Our teacher was Johnny Cool with a K.
Boy, this must have been around the time of like Karate Kid, right?
His name was Johnny Cool. Yeah. Was a big German guy.
Johnny Cool.
He was a private detective, so he always carried guns.
Are you serious?
And while he was teaching, it was insane. I look back at it now. 80s were fucking special. Everybody wants the 80s to come back. Everybody's trying really hard to make that come back. Between the music, the movies,
fashion,
and everything, it's incredible.
Yeah.
So that restaurant was really our family namesake for a while. And I remember they couldn't cut it. It was like, it was really rough. I remember them, a lot of the people telling, why would you open a French restaurant after World War II, right in Germantown? There's no way that's going to survive. It ended up being the best thing because, like, there was no competition.
Yeah.
It was the only French restaurant. They were in the middle of a very – the Germans, I like, at that period were like, okay, we – it was like time to make amends or something like
sure.
that.
Yeah.
They were
yeah.
like the best customers. I remember my uncle and my dad had to accommodate because all the German workers, when they used to go to work, they would go to the restaurant. They had to open up the bar in the morning because everybody wanted shots and coffee, like peach schnapps and all these schnapps and all those German liquors and coffee just to go to work. So the restaurant was basically open 24/7.
Wow.
Because it just like the demand. That establishment was insane. And I know that they moved to between first and second. I know my family purchased the building, and it was a I remember that they closed one restaurant, moved the restaurant, and opened the second restaurant all in the same day.
So back then, I mean, you said, you know, they opened up a French restaurant in a German neighborhood, but just French culture in general, do you see it in New York?
No. It's you talk about restaurants and like traditional French restaurant?
Yeah.
Because over here, the word restaurant has been lost. Like McDonald's is called a restaurant, right?
Yeah.
In France, there are categories. There's restaurant, bistro, brasserie, bistro. And all those words define the type of eating establishment you're going to
go in. I love categories. I think we need more categories.
Restaurant means you have a tablecloth.
Okay.
You have service. You have proper silverware. You have wine service. You have the full gamut of food etiquette and proper service.
Yeah. Well, it's like... Don't we use entree the wrong way here? Doesn't entree?
Yeah, entree, it means entry.
Yeah.
That's right.
Right?
It is.
A lot of I mean, we're in America. What do we do best? Bastardization of stuff, right? I mean.
Yeah, but like, it's like, but this is where the best want to make it. You know what I mean?
No, of course. I mean, I grew up in New Jersey. New York, to me, it's weird. Like, I love New York. It's my city. The first day I got my license, I looked at my friends. I said, okay, who wants to come into the city?
I'm driving to Manhattan.
But while it is incredibly special to me, I think I do take it for granted, and especially when I started traveling abroad a few years ago. Actually, the first place besides like Bahamas and that kind of stuff, first place I ever went in Europe, I landed in Paris, and I'm walking around and I'm just like, you know, this is amazing. I mean, it's a beautiful, old city, and it is a big city, but I've heard that the most comparable, I'm sure there's more now, like Shanghai and a lot of places in China, but like Tokyo and London, I heard they're like the closest.
Yeah.
But I just look and I'm like, this isn't a city. Like, again, there's categories. There's A cities, B cities, like C cities, as far as like size and, you know, obviously.
I mean, if you want to compare cities in like activity, okay, New York, Tokyo, Paris, London, right?
Yeah.
But Tokyo is every city, but the 10 years in the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they figure their shit out.
They
like, you go there, they innovate everything. Those people live in the future.
Yeah,
and then Paris is they're struck. They want to keep that old heritage. I mean, they have they localized the modern part of it, and then, but everything else they try to, you know, to keep and like make it look the way it was.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, if you go look at these old pictures of New York, it's a shame of what we've destroyed.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like the old train stations and everything. Like, we lost a lot of heritage.
The fact that this city used to be called the Big Oyster instead of the Big Apple. Exactly. I mean, oysters are coming back, but you look at those. I want to get, like, a beautiful old black and white print of just, like, those oyster shell piles. Like, just that's amazing to me.
But you see, that's those are the things that are like, sometimes they just get lost.
Yeah.
And they're done. And like, you can never get back.
Yeah.
You know? But New York is now, I can see it on this block. Have you been on this block before, Restaurant
yes.
Row?
Yeah. So I've been to your establishment before.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You should have let me know.
Sorry.
You see, they're struggling to keep, like, the authenticity of the block, you know? And then,
yes.
Like, the lanterns and everything. It when you walk onto this block, it literally looks like early 1900s,
mm-hmm.
You know? And the lighting and the buildings. So now you can't really... It's really, without it being protected or even like historical monuments, they still try to keep it the way it is.
Yeah.
You don't want to become a historical monument because then you're screwed.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
For business, but it's a shame. In one way, it's cash or history.
Yeah, I mean, with this city, what changes have you seen... Then for the better. I mean, just from the time. I guess we can keep it just even to the food industry.
Everybody loves to bitch. It seems like everybody's complaining, right?
Yeah.
You know why? I feel like everybody's complaining because they have nothing. Because things are good.
Yeah.
And it's usually because when things are bad, you don't have time to bitch. You have to take care of your own problem. You have to take care. You have lost your job. This, that.
Sure,
like you have problems. You don't. You, whenever you have a problem, you don't. You can't focus on the rest. The sheer fact that so many people are complaining on behalf of other people now.
Yes.
And it's just insane.
And we also have so many means to hear those complaints.
Exactly. And then I just feel like that's because things are too good. If things are better. I mean, as much as everybody wants to complain.
I do think every, you know, year is a progression. There's obviously plenty of people pointing out that there are still shit things in this world that we need to work on. Or, you know, just...
Yeah, but for us in New York,
oh, yeah.
And as a country,
yeah.
I think we're good.
Yeah, except for the MTA.
Oh my God!
That's the one thing.
Listen, but that's an acceptable acceptable mess. You
is
know?
That yeah? Is that something? Is yeah? Is it a, is it a beautiful mess? Is it that one thing that you're just like that? I don't know. Imperfection that you just come to accept, and you realize I'm living in New York, so I might as well. Yeah.
Everybody said, "Oh, New York City, it's lost its flavor and everything. It's been Disney-fied. You know, we've lost CBGB, we lost 42nd Street.
Yeah, it's lost a little grittiness.
You know,
I think. Yeah, but
good.
Good.
It's good for business.
You don't want to. I mean, you're right near Times Square. You don't want to walk down to be solicited.
No. I'm good. You know, I'm old now. I got kids. I'm part of the old guard now. Now, you know, get off my porch, old.
So is this right now your favorite period living in New York? Is every year just getting better in your opinion?
But like, no. Like,
I mean, obviously,
listen,
there's times of nostalgia too.
Yeah,
so
of
you
course,
can't, yeah.
Who doesn't love nostalgia? We talk about the '80s, you know.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. But the good parts of it.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
I don't miss, you know, the crack whores and the pimps and people getting thrown off of buildings. And I mean, I've seen it all.
Yeah.
Like, a dead body was not a big deal in the '80s.
Yeah.
You know, me coming to this neighborhood, the very first day I came to this restaurant.
Yeah.
And my father said, "Oh, we're opening up a space on 46th between 8th and 9th. I'm like, "What?"
And now people are like, "Oh my God."
I'm like, "What?" It's like, wait. I wasn't allowed to come to this neighborhood when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And now you're telling me we're opening up a place here? What is wrong with you? I was...
So what year did this... Did Le
82.
Revenge open? 82.
82. This location opened in 82. It was always a restaurant. It was Great Aunt Fanny's. And then before that was the Swiss Inn. A Swiss chef and owner who actually was friends of ours. And then we bought the place from him.
Okay.
And we've been here since... 82. Why are you barking, doggy? And then we opened this one in Tangent. The other one was still open, and we closed the other place on the upper East Side within like a 5-year window, I think.
Okay. And when did you? I'm sure you were working here since you were a kid, yeah, but when did you officially?
So I've been working here 27 years, and I became the official owner. My son's 17, about 18 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I've been here a while.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes I have to do the math in my head, and I'm like, wait, I've been here how long? I was like, sometimes, so then when you see those numbers, you're like, okay, is it time for a change, or now are you in it for the long haul? I mean, what's the deal?
Well, so what changes have you had in the past 18 years? I mean, we definitely have to talk about your French onion soup, the award-winning burger.
Oh, the French onion soup burger?
But, what, yeah, so, including
the
that.
The bane
yeah.
of my father's existence.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. It was like, so Pat LaFrieda and my best friend Mark, so Mark and Pat, my best friends, they sponsor the Food and Wine Festival.
Okay.
And the most popular event at the Food and Wine Festival is Burger Bash. So it's like you have to do something. It's embarrassing that, you know, we're friends and you don't participate. You don't do anything. You got to do something.
I said, the pressure was on.
But like, I don't have a burger on the on the menu. It's like, well, put one on. So I did. And one of the very first things my dad said, he was like, if you put a burger on the menu, I will never step foot in this establishment again.
Oh.
Well, the very next day we had a burger on the menu. And he, you know, and false promises, he stuck around.
So what was the menu like before that burger?
The same as it is now.
Same as it is
exactly
now.
The same. It's like, that's one of the cons of having a restaurant that's been here so long, and we have a very loyal customer base. Mm-hmm. Like, we have like an 80 to 90 repeat business of customers.
Wow.
It's insane. And that's just because we've had it for like 70, 80 years from the other establishment.
Yeah.
They all came here.
Oh, and they all
– oh, yeah.
Wow.
And the menu, it is – you change one thing on that menu, it's like a freaking revolution. People are like, no, you can't do this. I've reduced the menu very slowly.
Sure.
Like, I've reprinted menus for like 3 years, like every other week with one item less or one change. So it's very subtle, but still, it's – even doing that, it's still a struggle. So we have the limited – we have the classic menu that's been around forever, and then we have daily specials that are mine that I try to be modernized.
Yeah.
And then I have the specials. The burger had to go on the menu.
Yeah,
that was a must.
It blew up, right?
It blew up. And then, so I won a couple of times the Judge's Choice. In fact, I'm the only one who's ever won Judge's Choice twice.
Wow.
So that's a first.
Back to back?
No, not back to back. I couldn't tell you the years.
It's okay. But what was the first year with the burger?
I think it was 2014.
Okay, yeah.
And then, or 13. 14, something like that. And then 17 was the last time. And I think it just picked up speed. And then a lot of bloggers came in. I got to give credit to Gotham Burger.
Mm-hmm.
They talked about it. And then after that, some insider came. And
I think that's what I saw it on.
Yeah.
And that's why I came.
And she did a video and everything, and that reached, like, if I'm not mistaken, it's close to 20 million hits.
Wow.
On just Facebook Insider alone.
So you've got your loyal customers, your customers that came from the Upper East Side that you've seen talk about generational, saying, between you and the LaFriedas, but then obviously customers too. You must have seen customers and then them having kids.
I've seen 3 to 4 generations sitting at the same table that have been coming to this restaurant.
But then you must get a lot of people like me coming in, then trying, having the burger, and there with their cell phone,
well,
taking a picture.
It's weird.
Can you just point it out?
I can. So if I run late for service and I walk through the dining room just before like pre-theater rush, I could tell you who's eating, who came for the burger right away. Needless to say, I don't want to say how I know, but like you could tell who's coming in for the burger. And sure enough, as soon as those burgers come out, heads turn.
Yeah.
And then if I'm fortunate to sell a burger early in the evening as a visual and it comes out, because it's a great visual too. It comes out on the cutting board and it just looks really cool.
Yeah.
Then boom, boom, boom. That's all you sell.
That's the whole thing. I mean, besides it being an amazing tasting burger, it's just beautiful presentation.
The burger is the best seller after 8 p.m. It's the second overall bestseller.
No, what's the first?
The duck.
The duck.
We sell a lot of duck.
And what style is the duck?
It's the classic duck. No, so no duck breast, no confit. It's just half a duck, roasted orange, you know, duck à l'orange.
I got to come back.
It's good. It is. It's the only sweet sauce I make. Because I'm, by trade, my talent is a saucier. Mm-hmm. Like when you go to a French restaurant and you go in the brigade, there's, you know, the chef, the executive chef, the chef de cuisine, and then you have the sous chefs, and then you have the saucier is usually one of the sous chefs. That's my niche. And the saucier usually takes care of sauces, dressings, soups, and things like that. I love creating those flavors like stocks and just, you know, an evolution. Which nobody likes to do anymore.
That's amazing. That's like one of my dreams. I wish I had, like, when I love to cook, that's what I tend to focus on, and that's why I love most. So I'm very thrilled to hear that, because that's just really, I want to talk about that more. Tell me what it is to be, a saucier.
I'm worried that sauces are going to be a lost art.
Really?
Just because people are freaking lazy. Because you got the stock alone.
Even in the industry? I mean.
Nobody's doing it from scratch, from beginning to end. They're either... I mean, I would like to think so, but I just don't see it happening, because I see the end result, and I know there are a few steps are missing.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay. It's not polished. It's not. There are shortcuts taken, and the shortcuts are taken just because of like the labor that's involved in making a sauce, and then I don't know. Maybe it's because of labor laws and everything. It's becoming too expensive to produce certain items. Yeah.
What are some of the cliche shortcuts?
Well, they're going to buy their stock.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Or they're just going to do a reduction sauce. Like, reduction sauces are very popular, and that's become, like, the norm. Like, no, that's... For me, that's the beginning step to making your sauce. Yeah. Then you have to incorporate other ingredients and wine and or liquor or... I mean, there are different levels to the sauces.
In creating a dish, so like you said, the specials, that's like your time to move away from your traditional menu.
Well, it's not that moving away from the menu, a traditional menu. It's more me moving away from, because my uncle was the chef,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, all my family in mother and father's side are chefs and everything like that. So it's like... You know, I have to put something of mine there.
Yeah.
Because, like, for so many years in the beginning, people, oh, you're just doing your family recipes.
Yeah, you're carrying on.
I am. But now I'm the last man standing. I'm the only one who's making them. I mean, okay, so maybe I didn't create them, but there's been an evolution to them. Mm-hmm. They're only a better version of what they were before.
Okay.
That's the only compliment that I seem to get that I love hearing is that, I just keep getting better.
You know, that's awesome,
it's just like the first compliment, oh, this tasted just like I had it, you know, 10 years ago. That consistency, that's the secret to to McDonald's. It's consistency and you know, right? I mean, I don't want to compare myself to McDonald's, but that's a big deal. If you can keep things consistent and really like that flavor that person had, and they're guaranteed getting in again, like a week from now, a month from now, a year from now, 5, 10, 20, 30 years from now.
Yeah.
That's a big, big deal. And it's an impossibility, because what restaurant has a chef that stays there for that long?
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, that's one of the perks of me being the chef owner here. Like, I'm consistently here. There's, you know, I'm always watching. I'm always babysitting the flavors. Mm-hmm. So... Hey, Emma, are you gaining needy? Yes, Emma the doggy is here.
A welcomed addition.
And welcome addition. You're better. She's better off here than barking upstairs, yelping for me.
Yeah, they're doing work here. I mean, we're recording in your private dining room right now.
So we're in the middle of well, this is more than a private dining room. This is a huge dining room.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, I have construction going on upstairs at the same time. So there's a lot going on today.
when creating a dish as a saucier, do you come up with the sauce first? Like, is that an inspiration? What is, or does it differentiate?
I'm a stickler for old recipes.
Okay.
And so what I do is I know what the recipe asks for,
mm-hmm.
but I'll bring my flavors and originality to those recipes. So my steak au poivre sauce.
Okay.
So everybody, a traditional textbook au poivre sauce is going to be your cognac, your reduction, and your cream and the peppercorn.
Mm-hmm.
But I love to do sauces. I actually combine two or three sauces to make my au poivre sauce.
Oh wow!
And again, each of those are different, have their lineage and long steps, and then a final step is combining those. And even the combination of those is tricky, because you can't have a dominant flavor that surpasses like your peppercorn.
What's your favorite item on your menu right now? Do you have one?
Okay. Cash register wise, I'm really loving that burger. But for me, that I need to have it on the menu so I can eat it when I want to.
Yeah.
Sweetbreads.
Sweetbreads.
And but yes, Pat
told me, he was like, "Have you had this?"
So yeah. I took it off the regular menu because it was available all the time, and I was eating way too much, and that's not good for you. And so now it's just one day a week special. So if I want it, I make sure that I eat it that day, and then it's gone. But that's how good that dish is that I had to reduce the availability to myself.
Yeah.
Because I would eat that all the time.
Do you find yourself just like when in the kitchen, just
I eat too much.
Yeah. I still work random days at, my first job ever was a deli in my hometown. So it's
The deli is the worst place to,
yeah.
Because like
you just
everything
have piles of bacon.
Yeah. But everything is ready to eat.
Yeah.
I mean, cheeses, cuts. I mean,
I just slice like an extra, like all of a sudden I'm making a turkey sandwich. I'm like, oh, one slice of turkey, a slice of American, just roll it up and dunk it in some mayo.
Oh,
and
who hasn't done that? I've done. I love pinwheels.
Yeah.
I would say that is the most lost power of electricity is keeping a refrigerator door doing that. You know what I mean? You're just home and you're just like, okay, you unravel all the cold cuts and uh-huh. We're doing it right here.
Yeah.
It's like some cheese, pinwheel, the cheese, the salami, the ham, the turkey. Yeah, I've done that a billion times.
Mm-hmm. So we're on 46 between 9th and
8th and 9th.
Between
Restaurant
8th and 9th.
Row, Restaurant Theater Row. District.
Exactly.
It's got
a. What does that mean to you now? Like you said, when your dad said, "Oh, we're going to buy," and you're like, "What? Why? I'm not even allowed to go over there." But now this is. Well, first of all, for any people that aren't aware of Restaurant Row, if you can just explain what it is.
I'll tell you my first impression, and I was guilty just like everybody else. This whole neighborhood is like a tourist trap. You know, you have like, you have TGI Fridays, you have, what's the breadstick one there?
Olive Garden.
Olive Garden. Yeah. You have all this thing like two blocks away.
Applebee's.
Yeah, you have all that stuff literally
blocks
away.
Incredibly overpriced because even for them.
Well, they need to pay rent.
Exactly.
You know?
Heart of Times Square, heart of the city.
And which I have another advantage here. I mean, that's why I also have a loyal customer base because since, you know, I'm the landlord as well,
mm-hmm.
I have that extra gift that I can share with the customers is like I don't have to jack up my prices.
Yeah.
So that makes it very attractive to come here. But like initially I was like, oh, I don't want to move to this neighborhood. And especially in the 80s, it was rough. And then, but, you know, we made it happen, you know, and Giuliani came around and really focused on this neighborhood just to prove a point, and we reaped the benefits.
Yeah.
And right now, you look at, like, if you look at this block, mm-hmm. you cannot tell that you're, like, a block away from Times Square.
No.
It's
quiet.
It's quiet. It looks like it looks like an old vintage street. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's a classic old New York look to it.
Talking of New York and changes, it's called Hell's Kitchen.
Well, Hell's Kitchen, for a reason, it was properly named.
Yeah.
You know, and but now it's a cooking show. Now it's it's a hashtag. Now it's cool.
Yeah, it's Food Network Boulevard.
Yeah, Hell's Kitchen was not where you wanted to live.
No.
It
was appropriately named.
Now it's cool.
Yeah.
So what did you come for the burger?
I came for the burger. Okay. I saw it via Thrillist or what have you, and that's I came for the burger. As I'm sure, many new customers that way or younger customers.
It's great. It's yeah. I should have you know, it's not that I didn't want to do it, but when it's a family business and my father is a certain age and he's very involved in just at least being here. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't technically work here, but he comes every day. And, I mean, he needs something to do, right?
Yeah.
And this is, you know, it's like the family jewel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's what, you know, it's the continuation of, it's the last part of his life that's still around.
It's like Pat's dad going
exactly.
to work and working
exactly.
there.
It's exactly the same.
And that's got to be great for, again, your loyal customers to see and
yeah,
just
they
for,
love,
and
they,
for him to see people that he's known for decades.
Well, they love, I can tell you right away when he's here, because customers like, oh, they fawn over him. They like, they're so thrilled. Oh, you're still here. It's yeah. great to see you. And it makes it also lends credibility too. It makes it seem like it's truly a family business, which it is, but sometimes you don't see that. That's a visual.
Yeah.
You know?
Just going back to neighborhoods for a second, what does it mean to you to be a New Yorker? I want to know, like, that newest neighborhood that was, like, they named it already. I feel like New Yorkers should name neighborhoods, like, once it's, like, before it's built. So the Hudson Rail Yards I'm referring to.
Well, it gives
to.
It that, well, before there were neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Like, every neighborhood had kids in the street. Like, I remember growing up, we were in the streets, we were walking around.
Yeah.
Every neighborhood had families and everything. It's a little harder to see now.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see that neighborhood cohesiveness where everybody knows each other. But on this block alone, there is. And that's just from a lot of these places being here for a long time.
Yeah.
And just seeing the same people consistently day in and day out. So you create that little village atmosphere. Being a New Yorker, so this is something like, I always encounter, because people ask me, what do you feel what's your heritage? What do you feel? Your parents are French, but you're born here. Are you French? Are you American? I always love to answer, I'm a New Yorker.
Yeah.
I'm like, up front, I'm a New Yorker first, then an American, and then French when it's convenient to me. You know? And yeah. But being a New Yorker is something. And then saying on top of it now that I've lived the better part of my life in Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, for Hell's Kitchen, New York. That's who I am.
That's awesome. That's why I love. I live in Jersey City now, and so I grew up in truly the suburbs of New York. I mean, obviously you have Long Island. Those are
right.
The original suburbs. But New Jersey, right, you know, right across the river, it's practically, where I grew up is practically like another borough to here. Maybe some New Yorkers might be offended by that. There's always the New York, New Jersey riffs. But I live in Jersey City now, and that's what I love. I live in a neighborhood called The Heights, and just every neighborhood you'd still get to see. Like, I say hi to my neighbors every day.
So who's New York's redheaded stepchild? Is that... Yeah, you said, listen, I came to this neighborhood when I was 12.
Okay.
And started working here with my dad and my uncle. And that was the worst of it. We were in the middle of the worst of it. So I feel like, you know, even more so because we chose to come here.
Yeah.
We chose to endure here. And now that we're reaping the benefits of sticking around, not giving up, enduring everything that we went through. And what are you? What could you possibly be barking at?
Emma agrees.
It seems like she's disagreeing.
Disagreeing. Okay.
Okay, Emma. Okay, you got. This is why I let you come here to be quiet, but you can't do this, okay? The description of New York. Mm-hmm. I really feel that Times Square, this neighborhood, is basically like the capital of the world. Mm-hmm. Everybody on the planet wants to come and visit here.
Yeah.
Say that they came and saw it. Do something here. There, it's an intense reaction when you get over here because you see all these buildings. You see the bright lights. You hear the noise. You smell the smells.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm not looking forward to that for the summer. But it really is the pinnacle of like city life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. It's when I travel abroad, I tend to tell people that I'm from New York, just because now when you say Jersey, they're like, oh, like Jersey Shore, like that. I'm like, no, we have so much more to offer. Like, come to, but so you grew up in Manhattan, in a different neighborhood. Now you're in Hell's Kitchen. This is where your work is. Do you go out to the other boroughs when you can?
Are there other, what other boroughs? What?
Well, that's the whole thing. That's when people say, I say the city. I never say Manhattan. I say the city. And then everything else is Queens, Brooklyn, mm-hmm. Bronx, Staten Island.
Yeah, for me, unfortunately, because I grew up on this island, I'm always reticent to go anyplace else. When people, oh, we're going down there, and then we're going out to dinner, and like, we're going to Brooklyn. I'm like, oh, what? I was like, no, that's like another country. I don't want to go there. But listen, I have my sister lives in the boroughs. Mm. I have family everywhere. Upstate, I live a part of my life upstate. So,
oh, okay.
New York is huge.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you say New York, state of New York, come on, you're talking about.
That's a different world.
You know, that's a whole thing.
Buffalo.
So New York, that's New Canada. York, New York City, and then Manhattan. These are all subcategories. But you, like I said, this is the center of the universe, and then you wave out of that.
Yeah, it's the ripple effect, you know? From there. Yeah,
exactly.
So you studied at the Culinary Institute of America. I'm looking at my notes.
I don't know if I studied.
Okay.
Because I grew up in this business.
Yeah.
And let me tell you.
You got a certification from it.
So, like, let me tell you, when I got to the CIA, it was like a freaking vacation.
Really?
Oh, my God. I was not used to that. So I grew up on the Upper East Side, and you always think of Upper East Side as hot. I went to a private school. I went to a French school.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so I wore a suit and tie every day, and it was, like, very posh and everything like that. But I was the bottom rung at that school because my dad chose that school because he wanted me to keep a French heritage. So there was no other option for him than to send me to that school.
Okay.
And so I always lived in two different worlds, like the posh, and then I was literally, you know, service industry, hospitality business, you know, serving all these people technically, you know?
I'm sure working with your family, you probably worked every position.
I worked every day after school.
Yeah.
And however late I came back home on Friday and Saturday, that's how much earlier my dad would wake me up to go work on Saturday and Sunday morning. So it was a balance.
Yeah. No preferential treatment.
No, none. And always in the kitchen, always doing something. And not necessarily thinking I'm learning anything. I just did, okay, do this, do this, do this, do this. And then you do it, you do it, you do it, you do it. And then I end up going to cooking school. And my father was like, no, please, don't. My father did not want me to continue this.
Is this, do you and Pat just have a lot in common? Or do you see that in the industry?
It's unfortunately, it's you think. There's an attractiveness to this business when you're young, mm-hmm. because I was young and working, and eventually when I started working in other places than my family, I was making a lot of cash.
Mm-hmm.
I was making a lot of money. And for that age group bracket, that was, wow, this is very, very attractive. And then you see yourself building on that long. I could do this better. I can make more money if I'm the manager, if I'm the chef. And then I'll be in charge of a restaurant. It'll be that much. And in some ways, yes, mm-hmm. that does end up. But then but then it plateaus. There's only, you know, you can, then you can always improve. But becoming the owner of a restaurant has its downfalls.
Yeah.
I plateaued because you tend to take a step back to being a chef, and being a restaurant owner is, it's a catch 22.
Sure.
And I have no partners. I'm all by myself. So that's even harder. Mm-hmm. Like, I always recommend if you can find a good partner and someone that can alleviate, one who takes care of the front, one who takes care of the back, that's the best scenario.
Yeah.
So my father and his brother were that.
Yeah.
And that's why it was always successful, because one took care of the back, one took care of the front, and they never got into each other's world, and it was solid gold forever. Mm-hmm. And then, unfortunately, I'm the only one left in the family, so I'm doing it all on my own. And then what happened to me was, like, you get into a rut, a plateau, where you're like, oh, you're all alone taking care of everything,
yeah.
And you're like, oh, new ideas are not springing out from the menu. Oh, you know, the wine list is suffering because you're not keeping up with it. It's just like everything gets put on the backfire, and then you're like, uh-oh. So that's why recently, in the last few years, I've totally disengaged. I made myself – I disengaged from the kitchen so that I was not a necessity.
Okay.
I am the idea guy, and now I can focus on that. But that kitchen can function on its own without me.
Yeah.
So not that it doesn't, but yeah. it should be. So that gives me the freedom to move about, go in and out, do whatever I want, do focus, get ideas, fresh ideas someplace else.
Yeah.
Go visit another restaurant. For the longest part of my life, I never left this building.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And you need to go out and explore, mm-hmm. and just for sanity and to educate yourself on food.
Yeah.
See what's going on.
Well, it's like the same thing. I work in production, and I go and I see movies because that's what you have to – yeah, it's the same thing.
Speaking of which.
Well, yes, exactly. Speaking of which. Well, I wanted to say, so did you learn anything by going to the Culinary Institute?
I learned – they filled in the gaps.
Okay.
Let's put it that way. Because when I got to the CIA, I was like, I'm on freaking vacation.
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful campus by the river.
Oh, okay.
And I remember I went to a French school, and so education is much stricter. It's hard.
Yeah.
You know, I did baccalaureate and everything. You're like a couple of years ahead of the game. And the first 2 or 3 weeks at the CIA is math. And everybody's like, what? Yeah. And they have a great concept at that school, because you take one class, you graduate that class, you move to the next one. And then the classes are 1 week or 2 weeks, and you graduate.
Yeah.
You don't move to the next class until you pass that class.
Wow.
So you had people stuck in math for months, and eventually would just give up.
Yeah.
Guess what? The school keeps all that tuition money and that deposit.
Wow.
It's a great gimmick. I mean, it's genius.
Yeah.
And like, so that was a breeze. I'm like, this is so easy.
Well, you got there, and talking of the 80s, you realized there was a Miyagi effect from coming from...
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Waxed on, waxed off. I was so waxed on and waxed off.
Oh.
That sounds pornographic.
It said it wasn't a PG podcast, so that's fine.
And that was great. And I remember one of the first classes was French. It was like a 2 week French class for all the to learn all the cooking terms and all the practices and everything. I'm like, and then I remember I was in class and the teacher was like, aren't you going to take notes? I was like, no, I speak French.
Yeah.
He's like, she spoke French, but she was an American teaching French.
Yeah. So you were better than her.
So I definitely spoke French better than her. I could tell you one thing. I spoke French better than her, Italian better than her, Spanish better than her. I was multilingual. So that really put her off.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, I'll give you a C and you don't have to take the class. I'm like, I don't really care what my grade is.
Yeah.
Is that a passing grade?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I took 2 weeks
off. Do I get to go to the next step?
So it's like, yeah. Do I get to move forward and get the hell out of here quicker? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I took a C and just took 2 weeks off and then took an AM class instead. So it was So I did have an advantage at that school on others, because I had lived that life already.
Yeah.
I was already cooking and baking, and I did, you know, from bread to baking to pastries to sauces, and I have to say the greatest enjoyments in that school were Italian cooking for me, Asian cooking, mm-hmm. and things that I was never part of the menu at my place. And then I think that's when fusion became a thing.
Oh, wow.
You know, like a lot of restaurants were becoming French, you know, things like that. And I thought that was a great idea. I used to love that. It never really took off.
Yeah.
There's no great success story in that fusion type of cooking. But I always like to take recipes that are French and incorporate other ethnicity into it, or taking ethnic ingredients and making them into French recipes. Yeah. I always thought that was great.
Well, as you said before, speaking of movies, it is called Foodie Films. We're going to kind of do the same thing as I did on Pat's episode. Since we're not highlighting a movie throughout the episode, we're going to talk two scenes. We were, you know, emailing before this, and we came up with Once Upon a Time in America,
which is one of my favorite movies.
Yes,
but that scene is maybe one of my favorite scenes, not just because it's a food scene,
sure,
but it's just one of my feel good, honest to goodness. It's like a core, little boy core of like self discovery. It's sexuality. It's food. I mean, it's everything in. There's not even dialogue in that scene.
No, there's just a little. Yeah. So let's play that scene for you guys.
That one. With the cream. The 5 cent one? Yeah. But a 2 penny one, she only gives you a hand job. I can do that myself. Not that one. That one. You sure? Wrap it up pretty. Morning. Peggy home?
She's taking a bath.
Oh, that's great. Would you be so kind as to tell her I'm here?
Hey, Ma. Another bucket of water.
Wait.
So I love that scene. He's in the bakery, the exchange, and so he's looking at all those pastries, and what does he pick out? Those are
the Charlotte Russe.
You can say it much better than I, so that's why I fit.
But it's a simple pastry. But in those days, that's what it was.
Yeah.
And those simple pastries were done really well, because I can visualize that.
Yeah.
How good that simple pastry was, because basically it's a white sponge cake,
mm-hmm.
and fresh whipped cream and a cherry on top. That's all it was. But you have to consider that in those days, the butter was fresh, the cream was fresh, the flour was like, everything was made from scratch. And just those simple ingredients were amazing. And I just, also, the availability of it in those days was not great. It wasn't available to everybody, and it was a luxury.
Yeah,
and
I mean, what a treat for him! I mean, just the way his eyes are just so wide, and just
but
and specifically that that one.
But let's not forget what he was doing with that.
Yes,
that was a form of payment to go get services rendered by the young harlot.
Yes.
In the building, which was in itself was just okay. That's, you know,
yeah,
that's a that was where was she when I was growing up?
Talk about nostalgia. Generations in New York changing.
And she was a little on the heavy side, and you knew why, because she liked her sweets.
Yeah.
And who doesn't want to exchange a pastry for a blowjob? I could do that, but this poor kid couldn't. He couldn't. That, and I don't blame him, because that the way he enjoyed that pastry and the way he sneaked at it and just teased at it. Okay, I'm only going to take a little bit. And then a little bit. And then, you know what? This is way too good to waste on her.
Yeah.
I am having this Charlotte Russe. And it was messy. It was all over. And it was, it's sticky. It's just like,
just in yeah, the,
it was
in
just
the,
complete, yeah. complete abandon to this pastry that was superior to sex, basically.
Yeah. That light, beautiful, fluffy pastry that he's just eating in that dark stairwell.
Wait, it literally, he was on one side of the door waiting.
Yeah.
And she's on the other side of the door.
Being bathed.
So that's it. He had the greatest opportunity on the other side of that door, and yet he stuck with his pastry and ate it and enjoyed it and loved it
yeah.
and did not regret it.
That's such a perfect scene.
I could watch that over and over and over. And that's the movie that made that pan flute successful, remember?
Yeah.
Na-na-na-na.
Yeah.
Oh, that was great.
That's just a great movie.
And it's a long movie.
Yeah.
If you watch it with all the
director's
bells
cut.
And whistles,
yeah. Yeah.
It's a pretty long movie. That's a great movie to, like, when you're sick in bed and you can waste a whole afternoon on that, that's you have to interrupt it with a couple of meals, you know, get up, but that's...
Yeah, that's the whole thing. Like, especially with this podcast and all the food movies or food scenes we're talking, I have to make it clear to you guys, have food ready. Whether you just ate something, but make sure you have... It's just, you know, the ultimate food porn, you know?
Oh, God. I'm still thinking of... It also... it's also my dad's age group almost, right?
Okay, yeah.
And also, on another note, it also reminds me of all the stories my dad told me growing up, because he grew up in the south of France during Nazi occupation, and then there was nothing available. They were some of the luckier people, because they lived high in the mountains, in the Pyrenees Mountains. They were farmers, so they were not starving.
Yeah.
But there were no luxuries. And my dad can tell you his first banana, his first orange, his first anything.
Yeah.
I can't recall my first anything ever. There's not one, even my favorites, I can't tell you the first one.
Yeah.
No, that's not true. Caviar, I remember.
Oh, caviar, you remember. Okay.
I have a good story for that too. But yeah, he remembers.
Yeah.
You know, and he also remembers the bounty of red meat when he came to this country. My dad ate like steak 3 times a day for like years when he got to this country because he never had steak. I mean.
Yeah. Well, there's that one scene in Band of Brothers, I think it is, where the soldier goes around, and I think they're in France at that point. They might be in Holland, but there's a family staying like in the, like their house in like the bunker, and they come out, and the soldier gives chocolate to the kid, and the father's like,
yes.
"This is the first time he's tasted." He's like a 5-year-old kid,
yes.
The first time he's tasting chocolate.
Yes,
and that face.
Oh, the GIs had
yeah.
Hershey's.
Yeah.
Hershey's had. Donated all the chocolate rations for the soldiers.
Yeah.
I remember that. They had the packets. Yeah, chocolate was a big deal. It was a big trade. Chocolate, cigarettes, and coffee were the big trading items. Like, the GIs used to come. They would trade. They could, like, chocolate for, like, anything.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Kind of like the Charlotte Russe. They could trade
yeah,
with that, too.
For, yeah.
Unfortunately, that
yeah.
was the truth.
The other scene that we were talking about discussing is very, I like the juxtaposition. So, again, 80s, that's just maybe a nice
we're
theme
gonna
here.
We're going to go to pure enjoyment.
Yes.
To grotesque.
To grotesque. And so that's Temple of Doom, the second installment of the Indiana Jones. Well, now technically there's 4 movies, but I recognize just the original trilogy. And although the second one is a prequel, technically.
Yes, it is. I mean, that if you're a fan, that movie is so full of Easter eggs and
oh.
so much is going on.
I mean, the beginning is an homage to Casablanca. Oh. Another, wow.
And most people miss Dan Aykroyd at the airport.
Yeah, yeah.
And and the name of...
the restaurant? Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
Obi-Wan. That movie is amazing.
But yeah, this scene, we'll play that scene and talk about it.
Ah, sneak surprise.
What's the surprise?
What? You're not eating?
I had bugs for lunch. Give me your hat.
Why?
because I'm going to puke in it. Excuse me, sir. Do you have anything simple, like soup?
Ah, dessert. Chilled a monkey brain.
And we're back.
And we're back. Absolute amazingness of Once Upon a Time in America, delicious pastries, and then just, I remember watching this as a kid and just being like, you know.
Yeah, but you watched it at home on cable. That, I watched it at the theater.
Yeah.
Fuck you. Seeing
that food on the big screen, I guess.
And you can't escape it for the first time on a big screen. You paid for that seat, and you're sitting there, and you're watching that.
Yeah.
But that scene puts so many emotions into you because they were hungry.
Yes.
Okay? She was hungry. The kid was hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Indy was like, I don't know, he was doing his own thing. And
yeah, he's doing his Bond moment at that time.
That meal was a bounty of excess.
Well, that's supposedly. They're in a beautiful palace, exactly. And this is going to be with, you know, like the elite of the elite.
It looks gorgeous from the get-go.
Yeah.
But then it just turns sour real quick.
Yeah, between
the large cockroach beetles.
Yeah.
And the,
snake.
And the snake and the monkey brains.
Oh, for dessert. And just
chilled
like,
the monkey brains.
Yeah, the chilled and take the... That.
Which all of those things are real.
Yes.
Those in some shape or form, those are all real edible situations.
What's the weirdest, most exotic thing you would say you've had?
To our listeners, I've eaten a lot of things, but they're just not exotic to me.
Okay.
But I've eaten lot of things.
I had scorpion in Thailand.
Yeah. Bugs are easy.
Bugs are easy.
Bugs are easy.
So what's not easy?
Bear, moose,
wow,
antelopes.
Wow, the same thing. Bear, yeah.
Gator now is pretty prevalent. Ostrich is pretty prevalent now.
Yeah.
But when I had it, it was not. There was a restaurant when I grew up here called La Giraffe, and all they had was exotic meats. PETA would like...
go crazy.
would go crazy. Yeah. But lion, giraffe, you had every exotic meat.
Yeah. You said you're a fan of Joe Rogan. He swears by like black bears, and he's like, oh, we hunted this black bear that was like eating blueberries, and the meat was just so...
it depends where, what they're eating. Yeah.
Sure, sure.
But the bears I've eaten is just, it's just purple, dark, greasy meat. It's nah.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, I call myself a hunter, and I wouldn't waste anything. So even if it's not that great, I'm not going to waste it.
Gotcha.
You know, people are surprised because you have these animal people who love animals and they hate hunters because they're killing animals. A hunter is killing one animal,
mm-hmm.
right? I wonder if all these vegans knew how many animals were destroyed and killed to create those farms and everything. When they're plowing those fields and all those animals, they're like tons and tons of animals that are being killed for the purpose of servicing those vegans.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, one kill is a kill and that's it and it's useful. You should see between the pesticides, their offshoots and everything, all those poor, those animals that are really being killed,
mm-hmm.
it's... There are way more animals being killed for vegan purposes than for a hunter and someone who's like, you know, dedicating themselves to that type of like a carnivore life.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm a carnivore. I mean, do you guys have any vegetarian or vegan?
Yeah, okay. I have really popular vegan dishes. I do my ratatouille is an homage to the cartoon.
Yeah.
I do a really good version of it. Ooh. And one that I actually want to eat.
Yeah.
You know, I have a lot of friends who, my dear friend who was a food critic, Josh Ozersky, who passed away, that was the first and only dish that he would actually order and eat. And he's like, because that's because you made it, and I trust you because you're a carnivore, and you know. His famous contribution was the fat is the meat, and the meat is the vegetable. Like he offset everything because vegetables were not even on the plate. Wait, we're missing one of the dish from Temple of Doom. There was the beetle, the soup.
Oh, yeah, the eyeballs, right?
Oh, all she wanted was like, "Well, do you have some soup?" And they bring the soup, and then the eyeball pops out of it. And again, nothing on that table that wasn't possible.
Yeah.
So we went for heaven with the Charlotte Russe to someone's idea of hell on a table.
That's the beauty of cinema and just talking these scenes. But our last segment, because I know we should wrap up soon, but it's a segment called Gut Instincts, and so this is just a bit of a speed around, just whatever comes to you.
How much time do I have to answer each question, or is this?
It's not timed. Whatever. Really,
don't stress me. I don't do well under duress. I couldn't be. I don't.
You've done cook-off challenges. Though. I mean, before this, Bobby Flay, right?
But it makes no sense to me.
Okay.
How were you? I dedicate myself so much time
to the craft,
to creating a recipe.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so you can. The odds of creating something that's everlasting in 5 minutes? No.
Well, it's to see you go through that turmoil for the viewer's pleasure.
But that's not good. it's like you don't want to. You can't.
I'm sure the dish tastes the same then, right?
Oh, no. Cooking under duress is never a. No. There can't be any good results from that.
But you were on Beat Bobby Flay, right?
Yes, I was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got robbed.
Got robbed?
I got robbed.
Mic drop right now. He's been robbed.
I definitely made the better burger, but I don't think that, you know, Bobby, who owns so many burger pals, is going to lose to some Frenchie cooking one-time burger. Again.
That ginger's got what's coming to
let's,
him. I'm sorry.
can we start that conspiracy theory and let that propagate?
Yes, okay. Let's do it.
I'm leaving it up to you. Okay, speed round.
Okay, so yeah, gut instincts. Whatever, just really, you know, whatever comes to you first.
Let's not do that.
Favorite fast food?
I always say this. If my last meal, if I'm on, you know, going to the chair, is bacon cheeseburger, classic American hamburger. So, bacon cheeseburger, extra cheese, American cheese, crispy bacon so that it's crispy. So, like, when you bite it, it crunches through.
Mm-hmm.
Thick chocolate milkshake made with chocolate ice cream, not vanilla and chocolate syrup.
Yeah.
And onion rings and ketchup. And that's my go-to fast food. When, like, when I'm depressed and when I'm like, that's it, I'm having a fucked up day.
Yeah.
That's what I get.
Is there any fast food establishment that you go to? I mean, you talked about earlier the consistency of McDonald's.
Okay,
but.
So the Vian Diner does it really well, so that's not really a fast food.
Sure.
But I would have to say, and the problem is I can't handle it anymore.
Yeah.
But it's White Castle. Oh, man.
Yeah, they made a whole movie about it. So.
Oh, God.
It makes sense.
White Castle, it was, and then Chinese food, but that's not so fast food like a chain, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, White Castle. I haven't had Mickey D's and Burger King in a long time.
Yeah.
Wendy's is pretty good. No, it's and it's thank God that there are no White Castles around me.
Yeah,
because that would be my my failing.
Have you ever heard of White Manna?
No.
That's in Jersey City. That's like one of the like original. It was at the 36 World Fair, and it's one of the oldest diners. And they make the White Castle style burgers.
And that's what are they the originator?
I think there was like White Castle before they became big, but
it
was the first one around here.
Is it a smash burger? Or is it already made patty?
No, they take. Actually went just last night because I was driving back.
So
and
it's
I
a
just
ball.
Exactly
they smash the onions out and then.
Yep.
And then they turn it over.
Yeah.
Hey, are you in disagreement here? Relax, you.
She wants some. Yeah, it was at the whatever the 1930s world, whatever year that was, 36, 39. I think it was
39. That wasn't New York, was it?
No, it was. Yeah, there's both. There was that in the 60s.
Yes. Okay, you're right.
But they have like there's got big signs outside of it. If you ever. Go to the other side of the river. You should check it out. No, okay,
I doubt
sorry.
That very much.
Okay.
Do they deliver?
I'll bring you some.
Okay. Deal. Okay. I'll trade. French onion soup, bro. How big are they?
A little bigger than the White Castle.
Okay, I need six of those.
Okay.
Good.
All right. Go-to alcoholic beverage.
Everybody's answered that for me already. Everybody knows what I'm going to say. Tito's.
You and Pat, you're...
Tito's. Listen, we get along...
What'd you do before Tito's?
Honestly, I was not a big drinker.
Okay. So maybe wine?
No, I'm a lousy Frenchman. And I have all these great wines, and like everybody wants to impress me with their wines, and I'm like, nah, just can I get some Tito's straight up? And they're like, you swine. What? I was like, nah.
I just want some Texas vodka right now. That's what I want.
And listen, you know why? It's corn. It's smooth. Tito's is my game, and it goes with anything.
Yeah. All right.
Any event, any barbecue, any birthday, any everything.
Favorite childhood snack?
Favorite childhood snack would be, I had it made because my dad used, Emma, my dad, when I was really young, he used to start working at 4 o'clock. He would pick me up at school at 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then bring me right back home and make me, in those days, cream cheese, Philadelphia cream cheese tasted like real Philadelphia cream cheese. What we have now doesn't even come close to that flavor.
Really?
No. And then he, in those days, I remember he used to cut chives up and put it into the cream cheese.
Ooh, yeah.
You know? And I don't know, had he seen it at some Jewish deli, but it wasn't popular yet. I'm talking like the 70s. I don't remember chives being in the delis, readily available and everything. But he used to do that on an English muffin.
Oh.
Not a bagel, on an English muffin.
Yeah.
I remember he used to make me open-faced, two of them, and that. And then he would also make me kind of what the source is for the French onion soup.
I was just going to say, is the love for that the inspiration?
Yeah.
Okay.
So then he would make me burgers too. But where I deviate from him and where we don't agree, not that I need to agree with him because he didn't want the burger on the menu to begin
with.
Sure,
yeah, it's your thing. It's your baby.
But
he
used to incorporate, and I think that generation all did that. They treated the hamburger like a freaking meatball. They used to put the onions in there and the parsley.
Yeah.
They used to mix everything into the meat.
Yeah.
And then cook that. It was like, but then you went to cook that and to get that to where you need it to be. You're cooking it medium to medium well, and it's a meatball.
Yeah.
It's a meatball, a flat meatball.
A patty meatball, yeah.
So I kind of took all the flavors that he incorporated and then deconstructed it and put those back together again. And I added, you know, I added a shot of cognac to my onions, which he didn't do.
Yeah.
Because he was too cheap for that. And then the cheese, he would basically, he would use brie. I remember that. But I make amournay sauce,
mm-hmm.
and I use a French Gruyere.
Nice.
So the Gruyere is the stronger, envelops the burger, which creates like a pocket, literally creates a pocket over the...
It's amazing.
It's great.
Watch then, the videos and see it just cooking and...
But I have it down packed, so I don't tell what I do to the cheese so that it does that.
Okay.
Because that took me a while to figure out how to use... Because Swiss cheese...
But you're going
to
share it here.
No. No. Because that's the only secret I have. I didn't even give that secret to the other restaurant I opened. They still have the French onion soup burger downtown, Little mm-hmm. Prince. I opened up that place.
Yeah.
And they still serve it, but I didn't give them the full recipe. They do well with that burger. I think it's a decent burger. I haven't tasted it lately, so maybe I should go and check up on them.
I'll go with you.
Yeah, we'll see. I did see them using the Impossible Burger in it. I was like, no.
Oh, yeah. I talked about that with Pat.
No.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Sweet or savory?
Savory. But.
But. There's always a but.
Chocolate.
Yeah.
Chocolate could be.
Chocolate-covered pretzels?
No.
No. Oh.
No. No. I don't like mixing shit with my fucking chocolate.
Oh, okay.
I don't like chocolate-covered bacon. The worst thing that someone ever gave me was chocolate-covered orange slice. No. No. And now when I was a kid, I was like, I would see chocolate cake.
Yeah.
And then I would cry because they filled it with fruit and stuff inside the chocolate cake. Why would you ruin a chocolate cake? Why?
Wow.
No, chocolate needs to stay chocolate. Not, don't put anything with my chocolate. And I hate that. I fucking hate that. Nuts at best. And even I don't want too much nuts.
Yeah.
No. No, I get emotional about that.
I can tell.
Do not.
I backed off a little bit.
Do not like people fucking with chocolate. I don't know why.
I appreciate it. I love chocolate. I'm
no,
so much more.
Just, if it's just why you're eating it. It's the chocolate.
Yeah.
You know, when I was a kid, I fell for that trick of the Nestle Crunch. So they're basically filling up the chocolate bar with rice air.
Yeah.
And it took me a while to figure out, wait a second. I'm getting less fucking chocolate here. And I'm paying the same price. I was like, no. And then that did not work out well.
Favorite food city?
Come on.
I know. All right, so let's go international then.
If I can't go to New York,
yeah,
right?
You can't go to New York.
I do want to go to Lyon because, I mean, a lot of stars are born there. It's just, it's really the cradle, mm-hmm. the French cooking, or at least the torchbearers of French cooking. But I got to tell you, I want to go to Japan.
Yeah.
I want, I would say Tokyo, if I had to choose anything else but New York, because New York you can get anything.
Yeah.
But if I want to do something that I can't make myself, I would get Tokyo. I would do which city in Italy? I wouldn't do a city. I would do a countryside, and then Provence in France, Lyon and Paris, you know, last time I was there, I was disappointed. I chose poorly. That's Temple of Doom. No, that's not Temple of Doom. That's The Last Crusade.
The Last Crusade, yeah, okay.
I chose poorly.
Yeah.
And New York, California, no. People try to sell me on California and all that whole West Coast. No. Sorry, bro. No.
Is there something you've had in New York that you're like, oh, we do it better here than its original country?
Oh, fucking pizza.
Okay, yeah.
And then American Chinese food?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's just, yeah. It's
in itself, American Chinese food.
Yeah.
American Italian is, we do it better.
Yeah.
You know, checkered red and white tablecloth dining establishments, that we do it best. Jewish food is phenomenal here. You know, the mm-hmm. bagels, cream cheese, lox, bialy, all that stuff. Listen, we, you know, all those generations, all those poor generations that came here for a better life,
yeah,
they made food better here, trust me. All even French people. Don't, you know, French is not all that. You know, the reason why they have all those recipes, oh, I'm sorry, I'm French, so I can say this, by the way.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
But the reason why they have all those recipes and wines and everything, because the fucking proteins were lousy.
Yeah.
They don't have good steak in France. I mean, they do now, but not too long ago it was still shit. Mm-hmm. I could care less what they think.
This is one of those moments that it's convenient to say you're French.
Yeah, it's very convenient. But that's all across the world.
Yeah.
United States has the best meat hands down. I don't care what your argument is. We have the best. And
hashtag LaFrieda's.
Exactly. Well, yeah. Well, I know where my bread is buttered. But no, but it's the truth.
Yeah, yeah.
And when
yeah.
you can have a protein on its own and it tastes great and you don't have to bury it and braise it and cook it and cook it for 3 days and, you know, coq au vin. Like, okay, an amazing French dish.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the old rooster that you had to get rid of the rooster. That was a dish created to get rid of that old rooster that was unedible.
Time's up.
He served no purpose. Yeah. He was just wiry and tough and everything. And you needed a way to cook that. Snails? Really? Someone was desperate and hungry and had to eat fucking snails, okay? So they had to come up with a garlic butter recipe for that. And paranoia. They taste great. Yeah, they taste great. Eat the snails on their own and tell me how that works out for you.
Yeah.
Okay? Rabbits and pigeons and all that stuff. Like, no. Give me goddamn steak, bro. Fancy French cooking, it has its purpose. And it's my bread and butter. It's my living. It's what I do.
Yeah.
But I really stick to the quality of my proteins. Mm-hmm. I'm a saucier. I don't drown my steak in a sauce. I give you the steak on the plate and the sauce on the side.
Yeah.
Do what you want with it.
I like that.
I'll give you lots of sauce, though. I'm not cheap on the sauce. You like the sauce, eh? I give you more sauce. You like the juice. That's when SNL was still funny.
Yeah. favorite cuisine?
American diner food, Chinese food, but my 80s Chinese food. Like, all the American Chinese food.
Yeah.
Italian then is third. And, French is always going to be first and last because of my, I cook it every day, so I don't need to see it,
Yeah.
But, diner food, Chinese food, fast food. You're going to say, but those are not cuisines. Yes, they are.
Yeah, they are. I'm from Jersey. I respect the diner.
I could be content for the rest of my life with just that.
Nice.
I mean, Anthony Bourdain went all over the world and there's lots to be seen, smelled, and heard, and tasted, and all that stuff. But I could be quite content being dumb and sticking with what I know. Emma, you're contributing too much to this podcast.
There's just a few more questions. But yeah, I mean, I love, the man, I mean, he was from New Jersey, not far from where I grew up, and he even did a whole episode on New Jersey, so.
Yeah, as he should be.
And he did his New York, he did an episode just on Queens, and and the Lower East Side, I think he did an episode this last season. Let's see, guilty pleasure food.
Guilty pleasure food, ugh, God. Okay, so if I'm watching TV, my guilty pleasure used to be, oh, fuck, I can't, like a box of fucking Oreos.
There you go, yeah.
God damn it.
Are you twisting them apart, or are you just...
No. I love dunking them in the milk, and they need to get soaked.
Yeah.
And I'm so impatient that I would, dunk two or three at the same time, shoving my face with as much wet Oreo as I could. Damn, that's. And ice cream, chocolate ice cream. Oh, what's the Ben and Jerry's the chocolate? There's one where it's just chocolate sauce, chocolate cookies, just chocolate everything. It's not the New York fudge. It's not the fudge brownie. It's another one. I like that one. Ice cream is a big no-no. I can't do that anymore.
Favorite condiment?
Okay.
As a saucier, this is a big deal.
Yeah, because I am not afraid to ask for ketchup.
Okay.
As a French chef.
Yeah.
And I am not afraid to have it with my steak.
Interesting.
Yeah, I am not afraid of that. I'll tell you, when I go to steakhouses, I'll always order French fries and onion rings because I'll bring the ketchup.
Yeah, but then you'll...
But
yeah.
I will never ask for the ketchup for my steak. But if the ketchup is there because of the onion rings and my French fries, then...
It just happens to touch that steak.
I won't eat a whole steak of that, but I'll have at least one or two bites dipped into... Because it reminds me of something from my childhood. There is that distinctiveness of there was... Everywhere you went, if you had steak, you had, and usually because there was bad steaks and things like that, you'd have the ketchup. It made it get easy to eat.
Yeah.
And It was, but there's something about that, the gristle from the steak and the ketchup in your mouth just brings me right back to that era.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I need that. I won't do it for the whole steak, but I'll definitely put that one bite in. Yeah,
that nostalgia.
And, okay, so ketchup is, condiment. But then, I don't mind mustard and mayo for, like, French fries.
Yeah. I like that on a sandwich, like on a chicken club.
I love that.
Yeah.
But honestly, if I'm making a sandwich, a condiment that's rarely used is butter.
Yeah. I've got a lot, working at the deli, a lot of, like, older generation will come in and want roast beef and butter on rye.
Yeah, that's so good.
Yeah.
Like the French baguette, like a very fresh French baguette, between a ficelle and a baguette,
mm-hmm.
and just butter and French ham is fucking insane. I can't explain it.
Yeah.
It is insane, addictive. It's just so good. It's three things, and it's fucking simple, and it's insane.
I loved when traveling abroad, and especially in Europe, as someone that just, I love sandwiches. Our sandwiches are just so big here, and you travel abroad, and it's just like, oh, nice little, you know, petite,
Yeah, but I'll do the whole baguette. No.
What's the last thing you ate?
What's the last thing I ate?
Yeah.
Last night, actually. Okay. I only do one meal a day now. And wow. Was Porterhouse.
Porterhouse, proper.
Porterhouse is my, as my best friend says, it's my dining room. It's my home. Listen, I have a fondness for La Monaco, and I have a fondness for that restaurant, and how I'm made to be felt there, and mm-hmm. the food, everything just tastes that much better.
Yeah.
That is a proper goddamn steakhouse. That is the steakhouse in my mind. It is. It's a hidden gem.
Yeah.
Not that it's hidden. Everybody knows Porterhouse. But everybody assumes other places are steakhouses. This is a steakhouse. There's no sizzling fucking plate that the steak comes out on and ruins and boils your steak from the bottom up. No, it's not. This is solid. This is the number one steakhouse in the country, if not the world.
Maybe I'll try to talk to them.
Oh, you should.
Yeah.
La Monaco is he's a piece of art. He is Americana. He mm-hmm. is New York. He is like a great American chef.
Next question was last meal. You already answered that. So, do you prefer to? I mean, you're cooking all the time. Do you prefer to dine in or dine out?
Oh, dine out.
Yeah, there you go.
Are you kidding me? As a chef? No.
I know what questions will be answered a certain way.
No.
Yeah.
Like, no. I don't want to. The last thing I want to do is cook when I'm at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And especially, I don't want to deal with. I don't want to. Listen, the great benefit of being a chef when I'm cooking, all I have to do is cook. I don't have to clean up after myself.
Mm-hmm.
I did that for so many years. You know, I was on pot and pan duty. I was on dishwasher duty. And now I have the luxury, and that's because I'm the chef and the owner. I was like, I can make a mess and walk away from it. That's one thing. There's no way I'm doing that at home. No. Too lazy for that. I don't want to stink up my place. You know, even though it smells good, there's nothing, a good smell while you're cooking, walk out, come back 2 hours later, does not smell the same way for some reason. It's like, wait a second. Yeah. I don't do that.
You're going to the movies. What snack do you have? You can maybe answer it from, as a child, you go to see Temple of Doom. What kind of snack were you having?
I always had Raisinets at the movies.
Always. Whoa. Chocolate covered Raisinets. That's fine.
It is, because it was something, it was a smaller version of, I was raised by a Polish lady, and they have a chocolate delicacy, which, like, dumbfounded me, was chocolate-covered prunes.
Okay, yeah.
And prunes, ugh, gag, ugh. But for some reason, it worked. And Raisinets were just a smaller, manageable reproduction of that flavor.
I love Raisinets.
I do. But again, I think I overdid that. Okay. And I think that's my disdain of it now. But as growing up, I did that so much. I would do that all the time. But now, I love, like, again, I'll do the, what are chocolate covered almonds? Which one is those? They come in those big bags too now.
Yeah. It's the blue box.
Yeah. But if truth be told, if my favorite thing at a movie theater to eat,
yeah.
I feel so guilty and I never want to eat in front of my kids and everything. Okay. I feel so bad. Nachos, cheese. Oh fuck, I love that. And I always get extra cup of the cheese sauce.
Yeah.
And if you can mathematically stack the chips, right? So you got three or four, and you dunk it, so the cheese gets in between each chips and all the surrounding. You get a big mouthful of all that.
So the tradition continues from the Oreos to the nachos.
But there's this thing that's a satisfaction of like abundance of flavor and texture all at once.
Yeah, and feeling the chip cheese.
But not
layers, Jerry.
But they didn't have those in the theaters in the beginning. That's only 90s. That's came out.
Okay.
That, you know, I didn't have that. Popcorn and candy was like the best you could do in the movie theaters.
Yeah. Well, now you get hot dogs.
Now you get everything. Now these movie theaters, you can literally have dinner.
Yeah.
You can have a meal, which is That's I don't like.
I said to Pat that should be his next embarkment in changing the food for the movie, the cinema.
Yeah, but it's got to be like there can't be any hand to eye coordination involved in this food. Like anytime you just look away because of your food is a no-no.
Yeah.
You know, it's gotta be. So but when I order the nachos, I eat them before the movie starts. I sit in my chair and I eat them and then I reserve
during the trailer.
During the trailer and all that.
Yeah.
And I finish those by the time the movie starts because then I have like, you know,
yeah,
I have poor hand-eye coordination, so
why popcorn's great. You just like
The popcorn, I had that. I'm OCD with feeling greasy, and I like to be clean. Sure. So that's an issue.
Yeah.
So like the popcorn, I can put it in my mouth, but then you're annoying the shit out of everybody.
What is your spirit food? What food best represents you and your personality?
You see, everybody wants me to say, like, a French dish.
I don't want you to say French dish. I mean, just from talking with you, obviously, there's chocolate.
And then a lot of people are going to be tired of me just talking about burgers. But a burger, I'm a burger.
Yeah?
I look like a classic. I look like a burger.
you and me both.
I smell like a burger. You know, I taste like a burger.
So that same classic burger that would be your last meal.
Yeah, not my French onion soup burger.
No. But like a
bacon cheeseburger.
Bacon cheeseburger.
Classic American burger, you know. And I'll even throw in a slice of tomato and a leaf of lettuce
For good form,
You're right. But extra cheese, crispy bacon, you know.
I like it. And last but not least, what's the greatest lesson you've learned in food?
Does restaurant business count as food?
Yeah.
Because, you know, everybody has regrets in life.
Mm-hmm.
And food, if you love food and you love cooking food, stick to that. Don't sacrifice an opportunity to cook for, you know, like I know what I did, you know. I'm bitching, but it's like I grew up in a lot of restaurants, a lot of family business. Every member of my family had restaurants.
Yeah.
I grew up everywhere I went on vacation was to another restaurant, you know, to work, and I had an abundance, a plethora of learning experiences. But then I went to work at the original Le Cirque.
Okay.
And at that time, Danielle was the chef.
Yeah.
So Takun was the sous chef. Remy was the sous chef over there. Jacques Torres was the chef pastry chef.
Yeah.
François Payard was the sous chef pastry chef. There was Claude over there. It was like a who's who in one kitchen. And that was my first professional gig outside of the family. And I remember, like, no, this is a different world.
Mm-hmm.
I came to a crossroads.
Mm-hmm.
And at that, I was 17.
Wow.
Went on 18. I remember I had lied about my age and everything because I looked much older than I was. And I got my foot in the door in the best restaurant on the planet.
Yeah.
And I was like, they were going to dedicate themselves to grooming me, and I was going to be the golden boy. And I was going, they had big plans for me.
Sure. Yeah.
And
the chosen one.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
And what happened, my grandfather became ill.
Mm-hmm.
And my father and his brother were at this location already, and they kind of bounced off each other, so they needed each other. And my father said, I'm leaving, I'm gonna go take care of my dad.
Oh,
so
okay. Yeah.
You need to come here and replace me while I go take care of my dad, and that's a done deal. It was like do you wanna do this, or like, this is what you're gonna do.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I grew up, you know, a very stern family. I was scared of my dad, I was scared of my uncles. Like, I was like, I got it. Okay. Yes, 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 sir.
Yeah.
And I remember Danielle telling me, because that was when he was doing the cookbook and everything. And then he was going to use the summer to write the recipes. And he's like, and then he was expecting me. And I remember him telling me, don't go. You need to stay here.
Yeah.
You cannot go. And he saw the writing on the wall. He says, if you go, you will never come back. And he was right, because I came here, did what I had to do, and then when my dad came back,
mm-hmm.
my dad was, his brother said, well, I replaced my dad in front of the house, and then when he came back, my uncle said, okay, you're going to replace me now in the kitchen. You're going to come work in the kitchen. You're going to learn everything you need to learn.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that wasn't the deal. But I was so scared of them at that age and everything.
Yeah.
And they really controlled my life, like financially, everything. I was like, because my job at Le Cirque was, I was a commis.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't making any money. So I was learning a trade, and you don't get paid really. And so.
But you had all these people.
I had all these. I had a lot of perks. I couldn't complain.
Yeah.
Look at me complaining, but but then I got literally, for lack of a better word, stuck here. I'm not complaining, because I did develop. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of opportunities to grow and do other things. And at an early age, I got a restaurant to do what I wanted to do with. You know, I was limited. They didn't want me to change the menu and things like that. But I still developed a lot of things. I, to this day, still regret that I made that choice. Because it's, you know, it's better to fulfill like 100% one thing of passion than to half-ass it someplace else. Even though you're the bigger fish and you're making more money and everything's better. Trust me, everything on this side is better. I'm much better off than all the same people at the same level,
you know,
as an owner. But not as a chef. You know
what
I mean?
Yeah, okay.
Like, I'm very good as a chef at what I do. But just what I do. Don't ask me to go do Italian or this or that.
And that's what those guys wanted to do there.
And a good chef and so a lover of food is going to try to do as much as possible for as long as possible to get every influence possible. That can only make you a better chef.
Yeah.
I am limited by just what I know how to do. So, no, every once in a while, but now, things are different. Internet is an amazing thing now.
Sure, yeah.
But you have to understand, in the 80s, it did not exist. So you got your craft and your trade from hands-on experience with other chefs.
Yeah.
And chefs were not sharing information. That you had to go someplace and learn it. They weren't like making it common knowledge and everything. Now everybody's making everything common knowledge. So right now, you could do that. You could do it on your own, in fact. Mm-hmm. You can learn, you can teach yourself on your own. You don't need to pay, you know, all those cooking schools or you could do that on your own. If you have the love and the passion for it, you can learn it on your own. So I guess the lesson is, if you have a passion for food, do it 100% until you just do it until you there's no you have no other choice but to do something else to sustain that, but at least focus as much as you can on that, and then and you'll never lose, and at the end of the day you'll be a winner.
That's perfect, and I think that's so you can just apply that to everything, obviously, whatever your passion is, but that's
but food is a necessity.
Yeah, it is,
you know, and good food is even more.
Paul, I can't thank you enough. This has been such a pleasure.
This cuts my day. This was great.
Yeah. Oh.
I'm telling you.
All right.
Because I have a weird schedule with the theater crowds and everything.
Yeah,
because
we had
matinee. I was like, you know, I'm going to take off from matinee today. We're going to do this. So while it's just you and me here, it's a zoo downstairs right
Oops.
Now.
So everyone downstairs hates me.
No. Actually, it's a little vacation for them.
Okay.
Everybody seems to tense up a little bit around me. I don't know why. I have that look about me. I have no idea. But I'm a nice guy. I don't get it.
You're a nice guy. Thanks for honestly. Thank you so much. You messaged me. I mean, Pat introduced us.
Yeah, let's thank Pat. Pat did the intro.
Yeah, but you could have said no.
I could have said no, but I have nothing better to do.
And that's how I get my guests, people. Nothing better to do. You come on. You enjoy the time.
This is fun.
Thank you. Please tell everyone where they can, if you want to be found on social media or,
well,
you know, anything.
If you want to introduce yourself to Le Rivage, you need an easy way in. We have the French onion soup burger. That's what we're famous for. We have a secret off the menu burger that you can only find out about on your podcast. Well, Gotham Burger has it too.
I did watch that video. Yeah.
They have it too. But now here. So if you mention this podcast, you can get the Steak au Poivre Burger at Le Rivage.
Oh, well, that's. I guess I'm coming here. I'm going to come here every night.
And I think that's going to be our contender for the next Burger Bash.
Ooh, when's that?
I think, what is that? Last week. It's first week of October, something like that?
In
the Food and Wine Festival?
Food and Wine, yeah.
It's somewhere there.
Yeah, in the late fall or mid-fall.
It's just when it's... it's not cold yet. Well, that
kind of the best time to come to New York.
It is,
right?
It is.
No.
Fat people weather in New York is the best time. That's what I call it. Like when I want to have that line of sweat underneath my titties here. Damn it.
Or the horrible smell in your nostrils from the horrible garbage just sautéing in the.
Let's not go there.
Yeah, let's not go there.
Let's not go there.
We end every episode. I have a little sign-off line that is, and I would love for you to say, there's more to cut. That's just like something my grandmother always said about when she was making
There's more to cut?
There's more to cut. Yeah, so you just said it, but if you want to
there's
say it.
There's more to cut.
There's more to cut.
Listen, folks, there's more to cut.
Yummy, 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 I got love in my tummy, and I feel like I'm loving you. Love you, such a sweet thing, good enough to eat. Just a what I'm gonna do. Ooh, love to hold ya. Ooh, love to kiss ya. Ooh, love, I love it so. Ooh, love is sweeter.